Hello, everyone, and welcome to the seventh episode of Kidbrooks Insights podcast, covering the most prominent trends and the latest technological advancements in the rapidly transforming wealth management industry. I'm Zaliha Gindulina, the head of business development, and I'm joined today by Natalie Burke, our marketing expert.
Hello, everyone. It's great to be here again. This is going to be a terrific episode because we have a new guest on the show. We're joined today by Edward Sogren, head of quantitative analytics at Kidbrook.
Exactly. This time we're excited to introduce another perspective on how much financial technology can help people to try to navigate the increased uncertainty of their economic lives. But first things first, Edward, could you kindly introduce yourself and tell us about your background?
Okay, sure. Yeah, first, well, thanks for having me. I'm excited about the discussion today, so look forward to that. Well, as you mentioned, I currently head up the quantitative analytics team at Kidbrook. And before co-founding Kidbrook in 2011, I worked as a management consultant at Accenture for a couple of years, and then also as a quantitative analyst at Investec in London, UK, where I was developing pricing and risk models for derivatives and derivatives trading. And also going back to the time at Kidbrook, the sort of first couple of years when we founded Kidbrook, we started out as a consulting business. And during those years, I did a number of projects, mainly related to things like internal models for capital requirements or models for retail financial advice and so, which is sort of closer to the topic of today's discussion a bit. So yeah, that's a short background for me.
Excellent. So could you elaborate, Edward, on a little why you decided to focus on building a tool like Kidbrook's financial simulation engine, and how do you view the impact of your work there?
Yeah, sure. Well, it was partly from that experience on advising institutions, banks and insurance companies on risk models, that we thought, with all these tools available, why really should retail customers not have access to the same type of state-of-the-art technology? And with at the same time, the sort of cloud technology was emerging and driving the cost of technology down, we decided the time was right to sort of pivot away from consulting and to focus on software and to bringing sort of a decision-making software to retail clients in the form of a cloud-based API, which is now today known as the Outrank software Kidbrook has. And in terms of the impact, I think it's quite well summarized in the vision we have as a company, which is a world where everyone can make well-educated or informed financial decisions. And I think this by bringing this tech to everyone, really, that it's possible to have like a huge impact on the financial well-being of a large number of people. We think the best way of reaching as many people as possible is to offer the software to financial institutions ranging from large to small, and thereby reaching as many as possible with the tool, and thereby that's the impact.
Yeah, this is really interesting, and of course it really ties into the topic of our discussion today. According to The Economist, the consumer prices in the Eurozone in the past October were 10.7% higher than a year earlier. In response, the European Central Bank has increased interest rates by 0.25% for the second meeting in a row, following the actions of the America's Federal Reserve. Of course, the raging inflation crisis puts enormous stress on the households and the policymakers, who are only left with the hope that the peak is around the corner. However, let's start with looking into the financial industry response, shall we? How does the increased uncertainty due to the inflation crisis impact financial institutions and their relationship with the customers?
Thanks. Well, the effect of inflation, if we start to affect on institutions, affects them in more than one way. First, the level of inflation can affect them through the exposures they have, so affect their risk management. It will also drive up the operational costs, just because things are getting more expensive. But yeah, the perspective most relevant to our discussion today perhaps is, you know, the second part of the question: how does it affect the relationship with the customers? And what it sort of will mean, or at least what it should mean, is that because it affects people as well, that they turn to their, you know, provider, the trusted provider of financial advice for just that, right? To get mm-hmm. advice how they should tackle the inflation, and for questions around how it affects them. And yes, it's partly turning, you know, to them for advice on how to tackle it, but also asking questions such as, you know, what does it mean for my financial situation if inflation stays elevated, or if inflation rises even more, or mm-hmm. if it goes back to the levels it was before the crisis. How does these different scenarios affect me and my financial situation as a customer? You know, that's what you would like to see it meaning for the relationship. And I think it's, you know, the ability to answer these types of questions from the institution's point of view, I think, is central to building trust with the clients and maintaining that relationship, because sort of failing to do so might mean that they look elsewhere for advice next time there's a crisis. And, you know, eventually there will be, for sure, another crisis, unfortunately, but they're likely sort of to come. Yeah, just, you know, there's many different effects, but obviously it will reduce the purchasing power of customers, making it maybe more difficult to repay their loans, which can affect mortgage defaults, which also affects some lenders, for example. But maybe the most important point here is that it's not just the level of inflation that's interesting, right? You mentioned the uncertainty it brings, right?
Yeah.
And I think this uncertainty itself can make customers more hesitant to take out loans, mm-hmm. you know, to consume or to invest, right? Mm-hmm. And this will also, of course, affect the ability to drive, you know, and generate revenue for companies and institutions. So, yeah, both the level and the uncertainty has many effects.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And in our recent blog, you write that providing customers with a decision-making framework is more important than ever today. So how does your work at Kidbrook relate to equipping customers with such a framework?
Well, as I mentioned, you know, I work and part of the, and head up the analytics team, quantitative analytics team, and one of our main responsibilities has to do with developing and calibrating the statistical model, which is one part of the financial simulation engine that is Outrank. Mm-hmm. And, you know, on a regular basis, we also perform a wide range of testing and validation to make sure the model stays accurate and that it's fit for purpose, really. And yeah, you're referring to this blog post that we wrote, and well, we argue that, you know, like a decision-making framework, right, that we spoke about now here is very key to navigating this uncertainty, the heightened uncertainty. And one key element of this decision-making piece is also what we call the utility framework, which is also one of the areas that I am and, you know, our team is partly responsible for.
Mm. So could you explain this utility framework for those of our listeners who potentially haven't heard about it before?
Yeah, sure. So the utility framework is an example of, you know, a well-established mathematical concept, which main purpose is to capture the preferences of an individual with respect to investments and, you know, investment risk. And this is often called so-called risk profile of the customer. And in practice, what this means and how it works is that by asking a number of questions and by collecting the answers to these questions from the individual or the customer in question, we are able to calibrate what is known as the risk appetite, which is again a mathematical concept or a parameter that then can be used together with other components of the software, such as the statistical model or the simulation engine that we spoke about, and also combined with things like the financial goals of the individual, and all this together then, you know, different pieces of the puzzle to be able to offer a personalized investment advice.
I guess this ties really well with the discussion on what makes OutRank different from the other providers on the market. What are the other factors differentiating Kidbrook's financial simulation engine, and how does that help the customers to better navigate the current period of economic turbulence?
I think there's, you know, in terms of what differentiating factors, I think there's two elements that stand out, really. I'll sort of talk about them in turn. The one is the holistic nature of OutRank, and also this other part about the statistical model with probability. So I'll tackle them in turn. And what do we mean by holistic? Well, I think it's, when thinking about inflation or other financial risk, for that matter, it's important to not view risks in isolation, but to think about the dependence these risks and the interplay they have. Mm-hmm. So inflation with, you know, other investment risks, or in effect on equities, or you know, what's the effect on investments, but also what's the effect on my mortgage in terms of my indirect effects on interest rates, or so on. So, you know, it's this holistic answers. They are quite difficult to give, and that's a difficult perspective. But OutRank was built with this in mind, to be able to create, to take into consideration not just one use case, but many use cases and the combined effect of them. And also, you know, to look at this holistic picture and also provide not just different scenarios, such as what will happen if inflation goes this or that way, but also the likelihood or the probability of one scenario or the other materializing, right? Because if one scenario is more likely than another, it should be given more emphasis, and it's probably more important in some sense. And sort of tying this together with the probability as well, I think is also something that makes OutRank stand out and differentiate from other solutions that we've seen.
So some players on the market could be quite skeptical when it comes to the customer value that the quality of underlying models provide. So how would the end customers experience the quality and granularity of modeling?
I'm aware of that that reaction sometimes. I think there's a number of ways. I mean, first and foremost, customers who receive advice that accurately reflect the effect of inflation, they're likely to feel more confident in their choices and the decisions they make, because they sort of know why they're doing it, and they trust the advice they're given. And that brings, you know, customer value, which then in turn underpins the institution's brand as a provider of reliable advice over time, right, in the long term. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and it's likely to make the customer trust the institution more, obviously. On the other hand, if you fail to take inflation accurately into consideration or even mention it as an aspect, they might feel uncertainty, or they might even feel misled that it wasn't even a topic being considered and, you know, given specific care. Another aspect of the quality, right, is that for institutions building more than one channel and interacting with their customers, say in physical or hybrid channels, as well as digital self-service channels, if you have a model of sufficient quality, right, it's possible to use also in a physical meeting as a trusted tool by the advisor, and then give the same type of information also in the digital self-service channels. Sort of this consistency in different channels is also something that will provide value and build trust with the customer, I think. Yeah, apart from sort of supporting, you know, having a good model can support different channels, it can also support more than one use case. So what we've seen with our customers is that when the customer sees, well, what is possible with tools like this, they actually ask for additional functionalities, right? Pieces of functionality, such as, you know, what happens if I retire early? Do I have to save more? Or, you know, will I receive a lower pension? Am I able to see this effects as well? And then the ability to iterate quickly from the institution's point of view and, you know, add this depends very much on if the module itself is granular enough to support it, right? So you don't have to have a long lead time to add this functionality. You know, and obviously that brings customer value as well. And so, yeah, so it, just to summarize, you know, it's more accurate modeling, support for different channels, and quickly adding new functionalities is, you know, examples of how it can provide, you know, high quality model can provide customer value.
Yeah, thank you. That's really insightful. And we've had that a lot in our conversations with potential customers. They ask about the value of providing better models. And there are actually many popular beliefs around complex modeling. Another one that we're going to talk about today is the one relating to slowing down customer journeys, like whether more complex modeling slows down the customer journeys. What do you think? Do more sophisticated models impact the speed of the journeys negatively? And if they do, how do you combat that at Kidbrook?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, obviously, just firstly, the speed of the model is obviously important in a situation where the customer is sort of playing around with the tool and expecting this interactive nature, right? So you want, you don't want to have to sit and wait for 10 minutes before you receive the results. That sort of takes away from the customer experience. So, and in one way, it's obviously all else being equal. One could argue that a simpler model is generally faster, right? But with a well thought through design, it's not necessarily the case that the more, you know, sophisticated or accurate model has to impact the speed negatively. And, you know, while it's true that it will require more computational power, you know, one way of solving it, and the way we like to talk about it at Kidbrook, is to separate what data or what part of the model that needs to be fast and what needs to be slow. So if you think about a situation where a web page has, you know, hundreds or thousands of users all interacting and playing around and asking for advice, each of these users have, you know, unique data describing themselves in terms of financial goals and savings, etc. And you know, that type of data obviously needs to be processed and responded to quickly to maintain the interactive nature of the customer interaction. But then there's this other part that we spoke about, the statistical model, right? Models the future state of the financial markets, and often this is the case of very long savings horizons. So you might be looking at the state of the economy in 30 years' time, and this shouldn't really be changing second by second or minute by minute, even, right? Because it's a very long forward-looking thing. So that's by separating out these two, I think you can have an accurate model without sacrificing this speed or interactive nature of the customer journey.
Great, thanks for explaining that. But many wealth managers and insurance providers struggle to make financial journeys more digestible and easier to understand. We know our customers tend to regularly conduct focus groups with the potential customers to make sure that they don't overcomplicate the interface. So does the sophistication of underlying models impact the simplicity of customer experiences?
Yeah, so the sophistication or the complexity of the models obviously can have some impact on the simplicity of the customer experience, but it is not the only factor, and it doesn't have to by any means overcomplicate things. So I think it's important one has to sort of separate the way the results are calculated and generated, which, you know, has an impact of the accuracy of the advice and the ability to provide tailored advice and personalized and relevant advice. You have to separate that from what you show to the customer in terms of the customer interface, right? So, for example, using clear language, simple visuals, or interactive tools can help to make these complex financial concepts simpler to understand, regardless of the complexity of the underlying models. Like, one example to think, I mentioned sometimes is to think about it as you don't really need to understand how an engine works, right, to drive a car. And I think it's a bit same here. If you suddenly upgrade to a car with a much more complicated engine, sort of the way you drive the car or the what you see as a driver, right, it's more or less stays the same. And I think it's, that analogy holds to some extent here as well. But yeah, ultimately it's about striking a balance between the sophistication to provide accurate advice and the sort of simplicity in presenting it to the user and the user interface. But it's definitely possible, so it doesn't have to have a negative impact, I think.
So we spoke about a number of things, about the customer value, about some of the myths that are alive in the industry when it comes to model complexity and granularity, something about the simplicity of customer experiences. But now let's talk about the business value of actually making the forecasts and simulations within financial journeys more realistic and accurate. Could you comment on that, please?
Sure. I mean, the many of the business benefits are, I would say, or should be indirectly driven by the value you provide to your customers, because, you know, happy and loyal customers is what drives business value as well, and business growth, right? So, and we've spoken about a lot about this ability to improve the customer experience by using forecast and simulations to give more accurate and personalized and detailed advice. I think this, the way it ties into the business value, is that it helps customers make better informed decisions. They feel more confident in their choices, which in turn makes them being more satisfied over time, building trust and building the brand of the institution, and making them more likely to come back for more engagement with the business, right? Driving revenue. So by delivering customer value, you will derive business benefits as well. But in addition to that, I think there's another quite direct effect, more linked directly to the institutions themselves. And it's, they're really the only way of, or the best way of providing high quality advice, we believe, is by having, digital and hybrid channels, which make use of advanced analytics, and by digitalizing, simply speaking, you can automate a lot of the manual tasks that otherwise the advisors or similar would have to do, and that also is a drives down costs. So it's a very cost efficient way of providing the same or better quality of advice. And as an example, I can say that one of our largest customers managed to provide 50% more advice for the same cost as a result of adding the digital self-service channel to their existing physical and hybrid channels.
That's impressive.
So that's one example.
Wow. Yeah, that's incredible. And especially in today's economy, that's a massive benefit, isn't it, for a business? So many financial institutions may be reserved about using standardized decision-making tools such as Outrank, because they want to retain control over their own outlooks on how the economy develops. So is there any way you can address these concerns, Edward? I mean, how do you model the investment products offered by financial institutions?
The first part of the question there, basically how, these institutions providing financial advice, they some of them tend to have their own outlook and their own views on how the financial markets will develop, whereas others might not have that capacity or even have a strong view. So basically we have two ways of addressing that. So we create what we call a market consensus financial outlooks, which basically means we collect and we curate from a large number of research institutions or asset managers that provide public financial market outlooks. We collate these, compare them, and standardize them into a format, and then make use of that to calibrate the simulation engine, the statistical model that we spoke about. We're creating a sort of market consensus package that is possible to use for those who doesn't have their own specific views, whereas for those maybe larger institutions that do have more of a house view, that we call it, you know, internal views on how the markets will develop, we are able to accommodate those and to make use of them in the model to, so that the model reflects those views. And then you sort of, having established these expected developments, expected returns or expected interest rate levels, the second part of answering the questions on how we model the products has to do with then calibrating the statistical model to historical data, which effectively is a way of calibrating the risk and the interdependencies between the risks. And we do that from historical data and a statistical model. And finally, then when we have these, we also then map this statistical model and the risk factors to the specific products offered by each individual institution. By combining these outlooks, the historical data, and the individual, the specific product mapping, we're able to sort of offer a tailored solution, which is tailored for each of our clients and, you know, in some sense, unique and specific to them, and thereby modeling their products.
That's impressive in a way, because then the quality of modeling is in a way kind of reflects the heart and soul of the financial institution, their opinions about how the markets are going to develop and how their financial products are mapped against those views as well, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's really part of the core value, I think, we think institutions can provide in terms of how they see the economy, and markets developing. They obviously offer products to support their customers, and being able to tie that in a way that is consistent with how they, since many years, already work and their expertise and their way of adding value to their customers, I think is really a key requirement on any solution providing digital advice.
Yeah, and we are seeing that the industry is moving forward in terms of digitalization, and there are more and more digital financial business models coming up. So I would imagine that the importance of such solutions would grow in the future. And we can also see that there is a growing and diverse wealth technology space. So do you believe that there would be opportunities for collaboration on this market? What part of the value chain Outrank would provide?
Definitely. We see the market changing quite rapidly as a result of digitalization and many other factors such as, you know, the ongoing inflation crisis, etc. So definitely in when things change. There's opportunities for new players entering the market and opportunities for collaboration, certainly. And this can include collaborations between technology companies and institutions, or between different technology companies. You know, we see the formation of industry associations and you know, other groups to encourage the adoption of new technologies, such as, you know, machine learning or whatever. And yeah, I think this type of collaboration and formations can help to drive innovation and, you know, improve, set a higher bar for the quality and effectiveness of the services the industry provides to its customers. Yeah, and turning again to sort of this opportunities to collaboration, you know, that can take one specific example, perhaps from the perspective of Kidbrook, is that so if an API provider provides forecasting services, which is the case with Kidbrook, a platform provider, for example, could integrate that with its own platform and offer it to its customers part of a more comprehensive financial planning solution. And this could, you know, in turn provide a more seamless experience for its customers, as they would be able to access all these different services from the same platform rather than switching, you know, in an advisor meeting, for example, between different tools for different parts of the customer interaction. And also by having the data and functionality in one place, you know, making more data available for the API perhaps and more functionality available on the platform, this can open up you know, areas for innovation where you can drive new use cases and you know, improvements to each of the respective products and services. And so this is an example of how Outrank supports the sort of I suppose a technology layer in the value chain on a very technological level. But, you know, we also spoke about that the tool itself can enable a better customer experience by providing more accurate, helping to provide more accurate advice. So it also has an impact on the customer experience part of the value chain to the extent that there is such a part. You know, additionally, I could just mention as well that obviously, this is a regulated area, and we spoke a little bit about the risk profiling and the utility framework. That it can also help our clients to comply with relevant regulations, such as MiFID or IDD, in this regard, and that's also part of the provided value in some sense.
Yeah, so there's lots of opportunities there, isn't there, at the moment? So do you believe that the current inflation crisis supports the demand for financial analytic tools such as Outrank? Why or why not, as the case would be?
Yeah, I'm obviously slightly biased in the question, but I certainly believe it is supporting the demand for tools. You know, like we said, it has a number of significant impacts on the economy and people's lives. You know, we can see that by the amount that's being written about it in, you know, newspapers or on the news in general, right? It's on top of everyone's mind in some sense. So the ability to accurately model inflation, I think, is necessary for making informed decisions about it. So I think it's a critical element. So I think the crisis will support the demand for tools such as this, and it can provide valuable insights and analysis to manage the effect of inflation. So for sure, I think it will support the demand.
Thank you. And the final question: how do you think the wealth management industry would change as a result of this crisis? And would technology play any important role in this change?
I think the crisis have shown, like we said in the previous question, that the, you know, ability to navigate the crisis, you need tools, but you also need it in a timely way, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's the markets develop the market developments are quite fast, right? Mm-hmm. So you need to be able to respond in a timely way, and I think the best way of doing that across many advisors or advice opportunities across different channels and geographies, right? To be fast and consistent, I think you mm-hmm. really need tools and software mm-hmm. to do so. So I think technology can help the wealth management industry to achieve this. I mean, it will definitely improve the customer experience and therefore drive growth in the space. So I think it will change, but in a positive way. I think the technology is likely to be a key enabler of this transformation. We spoke about it's important, obviously, to make sure that the tools and models are up to date and that they reflect the current economic environment, and inflation is a changing and complex and dynamic phenomena. So without the relevant tools, I think it's difficult to provide useful insights. So additionally, it might be beneficial for organizations to also consult with experts and seek outside advice, to make sure that their tools or new tools are and models are properly designed and implemented in order to meet the needs and demands of the current crisis.
Yeah, thank you. That was a very interesting conversation, Edward.
Yeah, thank you, Edward. I think we covered a lot of ground there and it was really insightful. Thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you guys for having me on the show. And yeah, as you noticed, I quite enjoy talking about these topics. So that was I had a great time discussing it today.
Yeah, so that was it for today. And thank you so much for joining us. We hope you enjoyed our podcast and we'll listen in again next time in several weeks. Don't forget to subscribe to our newsletter and social media channels to stay updated. Have a wonderful morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are coming from. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.